You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the Lextown, Josh Hopkins. What's up, Joshua?
Just living the dream here in Austin. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Just hanging, just chilling in Brooklyn. Another nice day here. Been a little hot and humid. How about there?
Yeah, well, it's been triple digits for like 2 months, but yeah. I like the heat. Episode 51. You got any 51s?
51. Episode 51. Well, how about Randy Johnson, the big unit?
The bird killer.
The bird Randy killer, Johnson. Yeah. Randy Johnson.
That's one of the craziest.
51. What about you? Any 51s?
Well, there's the for Kentucky, there was Oliver Simmons, national okay. champion.
Nice
Oliver
pull.
Simmons. 51,
nice
and but you got a lot of people would think Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus,
nest.
Ichiro Suzuki.
Yeah,
51, yeah. Not bad.
It was fun.
Not a bad player. Hey, you read anything this week?
No, I didn't.
Nothing.
Did you?
No.
Oh,
not at all.
In book club. Yeah. Okay.
What else has been up with you, bud? Anything good?
You know what? I want to show this.
I was going to ask you about what do you got going on your wrist right now?
Okay, so this is number 22, Oat Strong, Believe on the other
yep.
side. This is, a lot of people might not know the story of Chris Oates. He was a Kentucky linebacker. And I think in 2020, he had a debilitating massive stroke.
Oh, God.
And he can't walk. He's recently taken his first steps with help. Speech is a problem. And to go from a guy who was a great, great athlete to, you know, in a day, you just can't imagine. And he's a big guy. And one of the only places he can get real rehab is in this place in Florida, because the machines and all are built to his size, and it cost a lot of money. And he made some real strides when he was down there. And now they're just trying to raise money to, you know, make sure he's going to have everything he needs at home, his family. You know, that changes every family member now, dynamic. And it's just a story, and he's working so hard and inspiring so many people. So if you go to 22, Oat Strong is his GoFundMe.
Say it again.
22 Oat Strong.
O-A-T.
Oh, yeah. O-A-T-S. No, not a O-A-T-E.
O-A-T-S. S-T-R-O-N-G. 22 Oat Strong. What a guy. What a story.
Do what you can.
Yeah. Bud, let's switch gears, and I want to get right into our guest this week. We've got a good one. I actually know this fella a little bit. Fella, listen to me saying fella. I'm officially old.
Yeah, see, I saw this fella, and I told him to put up his stoops.
He's a good fella. He's a good
fella. Look at my broad here. See?
I like this guy. I've gotten to know him a little bit, and did a Charges podcast with he and a partner of his about a year ago. But I'm excited to talk with this guy today, and I think you will be too. 14-year NBA veteran, NBA champ, host of All the Smoke, Matthew Kelly Barnes. Matt Barnes, welcome, buddy.
I got the full government. This we must be in business today, huh?
I try to find everybody's middle name. Some people don't want to come off of it. Some people hide it.
I,
but,
uh, I used to hate my middle name when I was younger because the kids would make fun of me, and because my mom named me Kelly, and I was just like, why did you do it? And she's like, when I was growing up, the baddest motorcyclist in our neighborhood, he didn't up, but also take care of the whole neighborhood, his name was Kelly. So that kind of made me feel better at the time. But I'm 11 at the time, getting made for having a girl's middle name. So it kind of eased the pain a little bit, I guess.
The boy name.
No, I get it. Boy name Sue. Yeah, that's right. My middle name is Everett. So I understand. I got made fun of as well. Hey, Matt. I know some of your background. You know, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. Just as a sports person, but getting to know you over the last few years has been amazing. I know some of your background, but for, you know, average folks who might not know, you moved to Sacramento when you were young and you kind of stuck out because you were a black kid in a mostly white school. Yep. Talk to me about that. And what was your childhood like?
I grew up biracial, mother Italian, dad black, in San Jose, born in 1980. My dad was in the streets doing things. And in 1988, we moved to Sacramento. So I was 8 years old, moved to Sacramento. That was the first time, even though I'm biracial, it was the first time I was really around white kids. You know, my neighborhood in San Jose was primarily black, Mexican, and Asian. And I moved to Sacramento, and my neighborhood was similar, but my parents always seemed to put me in white schools once we got up there. And I just never really understood why. Like you said earlier, I stood out like a sore thumb. But looking back on all these years, I'm thankful for it. And the reason why I'm thankful for it was because it just taught me how to move in different spaces. Now, that's not to say the second I got there, I faced a whole lot of racism. You know, this is 9 years old, so I'm going into third grade, not understanding why they won't let me play basketball. They won't let me play kickball. They won't let me play football. They won't let me play baseball. And I'm just like these kids won't even give me a chance. And then, you know, through that, some of the kids started calling me nigger. And I was just like, as a child, you don't understand the color of your skin makes you different. You know, you just feel like, hey, you know, we're kids, let's play. But, you know, that really started to get to me. And, I, you know, obviously, as a young kid, I'd go home to my mom and she would do what a mother did. But my dad was on the opposite end. He's just like, you know, if they call you nigger, they do this, they do that, fight them, fight, you know, fight, stand up for yourself. And I'm like, oh, OK. So that's kind of where really the mentality that lasted up till now started was just kind of standing on my own, defending myself. And, you know, facing a lot of racism. So, again, fast forward now after I started, you know, kind of fighting my way to acceptance, kids started letting me play. And, you know, I was a standout athlete in football, baseball, basketball. And oddly enough, have friends to this day that started off as people who didn't accept me.
Huh. Yeah. Damn. You know, I think back and I'm trying to think about, you know, what I always admired about your game. Well, the main thing is that you have as much defensive confidence as most players have offensive confidence. And that's one of the main reasons I love you. But I'm thinking back, and as a young person, you know, you played sports. I'm sure at times getting lost in the sport, some of that anger and stuff had to come out. And did it? And if it did and when it did, how were those lessons learned, learning how to dial it down on the football field or basketball court?
Well, that was the one thing that really kind of honed me as most people. I was a football player first, you know, senior year, All-American, led the nation in touchdowns, had my option of where I wanted
to go to high school.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I chose UCLA in basketball for the longevity, but, you know, I always considered myself Rex. A football player that played in the NBA. You know, I always loved, like you said, to play defense. I loved to mix it up because I came from the gridiron and I just always played really hard. You know what I mean? Football, I mean, basketball, trust me, basketball is very tough and we all know how hard it is to make it to the NBA and even to college, but football is just a different discipline and a different mentality. Yeah. And if you're slacking it all out there, that's when you really get hurt. So my motor was always full speed ahead. You know, I learned as a receiver, I got to hit the safeties before they hit me. So I asked you, you know, in the second round, like to shoot more balls up and really show more. But I realized that in defense, it was always something that I was good at. And luckily, I got in the league in 2002 where you could still play a little bit of defense. So I kind of just realized that, okay, if I get out here and play defense, I'll be able to, you know, work on my game enough to show that I have a little bit of NBA offense. And that was kind of just the approach I took, you know, really until that 2006-2007 Warriors season. You know, I was really teetering on the fence of possibly not being in the NBA, having NFL workouts lined up just to see it, just in case it didn't happen. But I finally, you know, Don Nelson gave me an opportunity in 2006. And, you know, from there, all I really needed was the confidence of a coach to really give me an opportunity. He did that. And, you know, I feel like that 2006 season, although it was my fourth season going into the NBA, that was kind of really like my first season really getting an opportunity to do a little bit of everything. And then from there, you know, I was lucky to hang on for another, you know, 10 years, 11 years.
Well, I do want to say something to the because a lot of people will be just listening to this pod, and there's a little bit going in and out, but you know, it's so on brand. I love it because you're known as a guy that really gives no fucks, and this is our first guest driving during the podcast.
You know, my days got stacked up. ESPN called me in yesterday, so I had to change my workout time because I have to go into ESPN. I get home and get showered up. I apologize. Normally I'd be sitting and conversating with you guys.
It's great.
It's great. It's perfect. Matt, so go back. You're an All-American high school football player. Why did you choose to play basketball instead of football? Was it, you know, UCLA tradition, John Wooden, Steve Lavin, or the money UCLA paid you?
I didn't start getting later. I really just felt like it was a longevity thing, Rex. You know, at the time, you know, Tony Gonzalez is probably 4 or 5 years older than me, but he's only 6'4". You know what I mean? Yeah. So I just didn't see any 6'8" guys growing across the middle. Obviously, I know my history and guys like Harold Carmichael and then guys that came a little bit after me, Gates, but no one outside of Harold Carmichael was, you know, over 6'4". You know, so I just thought, you know, at the time, 6'8", 215, these strong safeties, these middle linebackers are going to be tearing my ass up. So yeah, I just felt like, you know, I felt like obviously, and when I say this with all due respect, because I know how hard it is to make it in any professional sport, but I wholeheartedly believe that I could have made a splash and an impact in the NFL. I just didn't feel like it would have been as long as the run I had the opportunity to have in the NFL, the NBA was.
Steph Curry's record-breaking three-pointer, Jason Tatum's buzzer-beating alley-oop, Ja Morant's poster dunk. NBA Top Shot is where the greatest moments from NBA history are turned into officially licensed digital collectibles. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards by making it easier to buy, sell, and collect by removing the hassle of grading, shoeboxes, and shipping fees. You can buy or sell moments in a few clicks and access them at any time on your phone or computer. Your collection is always at your fingertips. Start collecting Top Shot moments in any way you want. Collect rookie moments from future stars like Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. Collect throwback moments from former NBA stars like Shaq and Allen Iverson. Or collect moments from your favorite team to gain access to exclusive perks. Grab your starter pack today and Top Shot will give you $20 back to start your collection and pick up some of your favorite moments in the marketplace. Go to about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews and get in the game today. When I was watching, I was finishing up playing as you were in college and just finishing up. And I remember watching you all through your college career and they'd be like, well, he's probably a second rounder. I don't know. Might not get drafted. And I never fucking understood it. I couldn't get it. He's 6'7". He runs, he jumps. He's a football player. He's defensive. I didn't get it. How was that, you know, and there I am on the other end who, you know, a high draft pick and had it, you know, guaranteed contract right away at a young age and all that. How was it for you knowing and feeling like, man, I am a first round pick. I'm a lottery type guy. They just don't know it. How was it fighting through that?
Just really to prove myself, you know what I mean? Because when I went to UCLA, we came off back-to-back number one recruiting classes. So the 97 class was Baron Davis's class. They were number one in the in college, number one recruiting class. And then my class came in where we had four McDonald's All-Americans, and I was the fifth guy. I didn't make the McDonald's All-American game because I was hurt my senior year. But we had, you know, I was kind of the fifth of four McDonald's All-Americans. So Coach Lav put me, you know, because we were so we had Jerron Rush, and then the next year we had Jason Capono. So Lav put me as an undersized power forward, you know. So this is before that was cool. So I'm 6'7", 6'8", 210, 215, trying to guard the Collins twins and Boozer and all these other guys. So it's just like I never really got a chance to get on the wing because, you know, and I was thankful just to have an opportunity to be on the court, because my whole thing was just put me on the court, I'll make something happen. But when I first came in the NBA, as you know, it was more positional. There, you know, the fours were power forwards. These guys are 6'10", 6'11", Chris Webber, Kevin Garnett, Dirk Nowitzki, McDice. And I'm just like, well, I'm definitely not a fucking power forward. So when I came to the, league, it was just kind of really finding my footing as a wing, because I hadn't been a wing in 4 years, you know, since high school. So kind of try to really just having to prove myself. Did I feel like I had the talent? Yes, but there were times that I just didn't get the opportunity. So I would start doubting myself, like, you know, do I have the talent? Right. Do I have what it takes? You know, am I this good? And it really, I really had to, you know, I hit rock bottom. I want to say my second year, where I was with Sacramento and I was in the Chris Webber trade, and he, you know, lifted his no trade clause and went to Philly to play with AI after his big knee injury. Right. And just didn't get a chance to play at all. And I'm just like, damn, you know what I mean? Like, is this what it is? And that's when I start thinking, you know, is, you know, what's next? Is it football? Am I going to keep grinding? And I always got to thank my big brother, Chris Webber. He's just like, you know, you have it, but how the fuck is someone else going to believe in you if you don't believe in yourself? So it was really like that mental hurdle, because Rex, you know, there's so many guys in the league that have talent. If you're on an NBA bench, you have talent. Now, whether you get the opportunity or not, or whether you seize the moment when you get the opportunity, is two different things. So I just hadn't really had a chance to get the opportunity, you know. So I'm going into my fourth year and I really hadn't got any significant time. And that's when I went to Golden State, and, you know, Don Nelson saw me play in the summertime. Quick story. I was in Sacramento at the time. My former UCLA teammate, Baron Davis, had just got traded to the Warriors the season before. It's like, hey, we're having a pickup game down here in the Bay. If you're not doing nothing, pull up. And he literally hit me maybe 8:30, and it started like at 11. So I'm like, damn. So I got up, took a shower, and got on the freeway, drove an hour and a half, and really played well in this pickup opportunity. And little did I know, Don Nelson was sitting, you know, the Warriors practice facility inside the old hotel. The coaches see down on the floor. And I didn't know Nelly was watching the whole time. And he came down after and introduced himself and put his arm around me. He's like, what are you doing this season, kid? I'm just like, man, I'm trying to find a job, coach. He's like, well, I really like what you did. I can't promise you anything, but I promise you, if you play as hard as you did today, I'll give you an opportunity. So I signed. I was a training camp invitee. So they already had 16 guaranteed contracts and three guys they had already invited. So I was a 20th guy coming into training camp. And like I said, you know, all you need is the confidence of the coach. And the fact that he told me is like, if you come out here and do what you do, I'm going to give you a chance. So I busted my ass in training camp, obviously beat the invitees. They ended up cutting someone who had a partial guarantee to give me a chance. So I'm starting on the end of the bench at the beginning of the 06 season. I'm on the end of the bench, you know, getting, you know, garbage minutes. We weren't a very good team at the beginning of the season. So I was getting a little opportunity to play. You know, I took my practices as games, even though we all know Nelly doesn't practice as much. So I just kind of kept grinding until I really got the opportunity to show what I can do. And Nelly finally gave me a chance. I went out there and played well. And then after that, there was really no looking back.
It was amazing for me to watch, you know, and that's where I think I credit you the most, you know. Yeah, guys bounce around from team to team. And yeah, maybe you say you started as the 12th guy. Every team you ever played on, it didn't matter if you came off, you know, waivers or whatever it was, you within days were in the rotation, you know, starting or sixth man. So it was undeniable that you played the game the right way. It was undeniable that you had the, well, you could be thrown into a game and guard anybody right away, pretty much. Do you ever think about, Matt, you know, today's game, 6'7", your size, you know, what you would have, you know, because again, we had Jerry Stackhouse on a while back, and you know, Jerry basically played kind of inside in college for a lot of college. Can you imagine, you know, today's game and how guys are trained like your kids are now, knowing, you know, you're going to have the size 6'7", 6'8", what, you know, you could have been doing. You'd have been shooting threes, you know, early, right?
A lot early. You know, I was the first person in NBA history. I think it was my first 4 years. I only made 10 threes. Wow. And then that fifth year when I started playing, I made it over 110. So I was the first person ever to have that kind of, because I got the opportunity. But I mean, to your point, today's game, and that's what I, when I coach my kids, it's all about versatility. You know what I mean? Everyone is big and everyone's got to be able to do everything, you know? So again, in college, I was an undersized power forward, but in today's league, I could be a stretch. It would be more of a stretch four, or even throwing at the five sometimes, you know? So the game is obviously evolved, because to me, I just feel like, and I say this with all due respect, it's just more of a glorified pickup game. You know, when we first came in the game, or as you were playing and as you were leaving, the ball went inside out. You know, the big had to touch the ball before you got any kind of perimeter shots or anything else going in the game. Now there's bigs that, you know, I could probably name three or four bigs that can even make a move, you know, with their back to the basket. So the game has changed so much, and it really fit really those tweeners, those in-between guys that could play three, two, three, four. So, you know, it's dope to see, but that's what I really preach to our kids these days, because obviously, you know, I want to be this, I want to be that. And I just try to teach our kids, first of all, the mental is the real grind, but it's going to be positionless. I feel like in the next handful of years, it's going to be guys that can do a little bit of everything. You know, you got to be very skilled these days. It's not so much about strength or height anymore. Now it's more about skill set and ability. And, you know, where I feel the game lacks today is because obviously I feel like these kids are more skilled than they've ever been. I feel like they lack basketball IQ because it's so much one-on-one ball handling, me, instead of understanding how to work off the ball, how to set a screen and flare, how to set a screen and dive, how to play off the ball. So that's really the kind of stuff I try to instill in, you know, my kids team that I coach, my 13U team, is just kind of keeping your basketball IQ sharp and understanding how to play in space and play through concept, because again, kids are super skilled. They just lack that. To me, the basketball IQ, some of them do. There's, you know, obviously some very heady players out there. I think for the most part, if a guy doesn't have the ball in his hands today, he doesn't know what the fuck to do on the court.
I went my son's 30 now, but I went through, you know, the AAU stuff with him and different teams and programs and all that stuff. It was super enlightening, because when I came up, AAU was just starting. I might play 2 weeks in the summer of AAU. and that was what it was. And then you're back with your high school team. What are your thoughts on AAU? And as a dad, are you able to enjoy it at all?
Well, you know, coming up, AAU was for the best players. You know, not everyone can play AAU when we were coming up. Right. Now everyone plays AAU, so it's so watered down. Like, if a kid is not good enough anymore, he either jumps teams or his dad starts a team, and here goes a whole new AAU.
Yeah.
So AAU to me has been watered down a little bit, but then I also know just the dirty side of, you know, these kids. Again, my kids are 13 years old, and you know, they're being offered shoes, and you know, shoes are everything right now. If you get some shoes, I'll go get some shoes. So the process is just kind of just so up and down, in between and dirty, that I just really felt like, you know, as a father, once I retired in 17, I always wanted to coach my boys anyway, but particularly in this basketball space, because it is nasty, you know? So we have a 13U team. Now, I started coaching them in 2017. So they were 8 or 9 years old, and we've climbed in that process. You know, I started coaching them. I was like, you know, I told the parents, like, hey, we can have a really fun team that, you know, the parents get together and barbecue and drink and kids play, you know, these weekend tournaments, or we can try to go after the number one team in the country. And obviously the parents and the kids, oh, we want to be number one. So understanding what that meant, you know, unfortunately we had 10 kids at the time. We still have 4 kids from that original team, but in the meantime, we've picked up 6 kids, and, you know, we peaked at number 2 about 2 weeks ago, but lost in this big tournament. So I think we'll finish the season, you know, top 3 or 4 in the country. But it, when I ask, do I enjoy it? I enjoy it from a standpoint of, I love seeing my kids and these other kids, because I look at them as my children, just kind of understanding and see them kind of the light bulb coming on. And to me, I tell them, I'm so busy. I don't have time to teach your kids skill sets. And to be honest with you, they probably have better skill sets than me because the game is so tame. But I can teach them the mental aspect and the grind, because, you know, my 15 years was not, you know, it wasn't a walk in a park. It wasn't guaranteed money until my sixth year. It wasn't the security that a lot of you think once you get to the NBA you have. So to me, my whole approach, like I said earlier, is just that mental grind and understand it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I try to prepare my kids mentally, and that's the side I enjoy. But as far as weekend tournaments, I was gone the entire month of July, and three of those 4 weeks was AAU, from Atlanta to D.C. to Dallas to just game after game after game. And it really starts to wear on me, because it's just like, man, I'm coaching these kids, and then I'm one of the only parents here, so now I got to worry about 10-13-year-old boys, what they're doing at night. And it's just like it's fun because I'm with my kids and I'm sharing that experience. But to be honest with you, that is just a mental, it buries you sometimes, you know? So I really have to take time for myself and kind of regather and understand, you know, we're doing this for the kids, and that's why we're out here.
I'm interested to know, because you said you kind of inferred that your edge that you're known for, that really, I think, made you really stick out. You know, is your talent, but your mental edge and toughness. But you sort of inferred that it was learned, like your father told you, and then you did that. But there has to be some amount of innate toughness. But your environment made you tough. Your kids, do they have that edge? They grew up totally different than you.
Yeah, right. And I think that's the goal. And that's the thing that my ex-wife and I have always tried to understand, that obviously I busted my ass so my kids didn't have to grow up the way I did. You know what I mean? But at the same time, as you just stated, my upbringing gave me the chip on my shoulder, gave me the edge. I felt like I needed to be able to make have a long run in the NBA. My kids, on the other hand, live behind gates and go to private schools. You know what I mean? So it's just like trying to find that balance of understanding that, you know, we're not the richest family by any means, but we're very comfortable. And, you know, they don't have to go, you know, I used to have to wear my shoes, not till they had holes in it, but until my socks started going through my shoe, and then my socks started getting holes. And that's when I finally, and still for maybe a month, I still had to tape the bottom of my shoes. Now my kids have so many shoes, they don't even wear some of them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we try to make sure we give back as much as we can. I take my kids to underprivileged areas to give back and understand that, like, you know, you're very lucky to be in the situation you're in. Now, does that transfer over to basketball? Sometimes my kids are really, they have a really high basketball IQ and they can shoot the ball. But I always feel like you could be a little bit more tougher. So trying to find a way to get my kids tougher, because we used to go outside and play, and some, we would fight in the neighborhood, and, you know, all that kind of stuff kind of added to who we were as people. Kids don't, you have to beg kids, you have to take their electronics away to make them go outside these days. So these kids don't get a lot of the child experience that made us into the men we are today. So I have to try to be creative and find ways. Like, I'm about to get my kids into boxing. Whenever they get into it, I just let them get it. You know, I mean, they're twins, so they're not going to hurt each other too much, but they need to be roughed up. They need to fight each other. They need to understand that, you know, it's not always sweet. So I'm still, as a parent, trying to navigate that right there, is understanding, like, okay, you know, I work my butt off to give these kids this opportunity, but how do I keep them grounded? How do I keep them humble? And how do I give them that edge? Because my edge came from the grind, and they don't necessarily have to have that off the court lifestyle grind that, you know, I came from, you know, two parents who were functioning drug addicts. Like, they don't have to deal with nothing like that. Right. So it's just like, how do you find that and incorporate that into who they are? So I'm actually, you know, I'm in the process of trying to figure that out and learn it, to be honest with you.
I always wondered, because you talk about that edge that you had, and you were known, you know, not to be fucked with. You said and what you wanted, and that's what made you really, really special. And sometimes it came with some controversy.
Yep.
And I wonder how you learned to walk that razor's edge, because you had to have that, but that falls both ways. Yep. So how did you learn to navigate that?
It was tough, because it was funny. Someone just printed something out. I lost nearly $600,000 in the league from fines. And it was just pointed out the other day. So some of that was earned. Some of that was reputation. Some of it was bullshit. you know, so it's just understanding, like you said, being able to walk that line. But I think what I was able to do was understand when to reel it in, because despite with the contrary to belief, you know, I am intelligent and I, you know, I do have a good head on my shoulder. So a lot of my stuff was calculated. Well, I felt like sticking up for a teammate or playing flat, so I need to get a tech, or the ref is bullshitting, so I need to let him know about myself, so maybe one of our star players doesn't have to do that. So just kind of always running the game through my head, thinking as a team and not necessarily an individual. Like, what does my team need right now? You know, do I need to go hard foul someone because, you know, Blake is getting beat up by Zach Randolph? Do I need to go hard foul Zach Randolph just to let Blake know, like, it's all good, bro, I got your back? So kind of just thinking the game from that standpoint. But what I think has really helped me life after basketball is I've really stayed true to myself. You know what I mean? I'm still slipping up, cussing on ESPN every once in a while. My podcast is kind of free swinging, so we're really getting a chance to be us. But I think that's what people appreciate, because, you know, in a day and age where media, where everything is so sugarcoated and there's so much disrespect, I think it's a breath of fresh air when you get realism and realness. And, you know, that's what I continue to try to be. I didn't try to come in this media space being someone else. I think Jay-Z said it perfect. Every room I walk into, I'm myself. I don't know how to be anyone else. Everyone else is already taken. So I'm coming in as Matt Barnes. Some people love that. Some people hate that. Some people don't understand that. But I feel like if you give me the opportunity and take the time to get to know me, you'll understand where I'm coming from, because it's never really no, you know, ill intent. You know, I'm just going to really speak my mind. So that has been a gift and a curse, but understanding how to channel that energy and sometimes frustration for the betterment of the team. And I failed at it sometimes, but I felt like I succeeded at it more. And now life after basketball, I really feel like I'm succeeding it, because I'm able to use that reputation that people have of me to my advantage. You know, I'll go into business meetings, or I'll go into opportunities now where I'm flying all over the country to speak to schools and have, you know, hosting events and all these things. And people are like, wow, like, I didn't know this was you, you know, because I was like, you know, you saw me for 2.5 hours, you know, and I came really at the end of social media as far as, you know, kind of just really showing your life every day. So social media post career has really been great for me. But during my career, I didn't really have that opportunity. So it's always refreshing to me when I go and I'll see people like, wow, after I start talking, or man, I didn't know this is, you're not a thug, or you're not this, you're not that. I'm just like, I was never that. I was just really a competitor that came from and that had a tough upbringing.
Can you believe, you know, that young man from whenever it was 13, 14, 15 years ago that, you know, was contemplating after being traded to Philly, you know, going to football tryouts? Can you imagine that, being 42 and having this sort of career in media? And what's been your favorite part of all this, Matt?
I could never imagine. You know, normally, and I was a journeyman, I was a role player. Normally those guys kind of fade off into obscurity once they're done. But I don't know.
Oh, I know.
But I just think, again, like I just said, you know, I think me being me, you know what I mean? I think people kind of wanted to hear what I had to say once they find out I could do more than fight, so to speak. And to ever think that I would have a voice that people listen to and want to hear and respect. It kind of, like I said, I'm just living a dream, you know, to be able to play. I wasn't, again, second round pick, cut, went to the G League, grinded 8 teams, 15 years. Like, who would have thought that post-career I'm sitting on one of the best sports podcasts in the space, one of the top analysts on ESPN. I do color for the Sacramento Kings. I just signed a deal with the NBPA to create content for the Players Association. So I'm just thinking, like, normally the stuff that's happened to me only happens to guys that were multiple time all-stars and household names. So, you know, I never go by a day without really just being thankful for all the opportunities and people to really give me a chance. Because, again, sometimes you don't get that chance. You know, you retire and, you know, people love you for who you were, or people are like, you know, well, that guy was an asshole on the court, so let's, you know, forget him. Mm-hmm. So just really thankful for everyone who's really given me an opportunity to be able to show who I am as a person and explain that, you know, that dog you seen out on the court was just a competitor that loved playing football, was lucky enough to play basketball and made a career out of it.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Branded Bills has hundreds of designs available, including our popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Before I'm going to let you get out of here before long, but I want to talk about the Lakers in a second. But real quick, you kind of triggered a memory for me, and it was when you're talking about your kids and them being young right now, 13. And we all raise our kids to be respectful, you know, yes sir, no sir, open the door for others, all of that stuff. And I don't think most people understand that that's fine and well in maybe even up through high school. You can't play sports that way. You can't be friendly like that. And that's, I think, you know, for a lot of us growing up the way that I did, you know, as a kid in the middle class in the Midwest, I didn't grow up like you did. I had friends that did. So I got that perspective. But right. I also knew I had to fight for what I had out there, and I'll never forget. But also, I was a nice kid. I would help you up off the court. I did that until probably I got in the NBA. If I knocked you over, I'd help you up, you know, and most right. people think that's what you're supposed to do. And as a person, you are. But I'll never forget talking to Del Curry. Stephen was at Davidson and Seth was in high school, and Stephen had just started to kind of blow up, and I hadn't seen Seth play yet. And I said, tell me about Seth. He said, oh, he's tough. I wish Stephen was as tough as Seth. And now we both know Stephen he's a killer on the basketball floor. Nicest guy you've ever met. Right. But at that point in time, even Dell, for one of the greatest players in the world he was talking about, didn't know, right. you know, just how tough Stephen was if he got pushed. He knew Seth had it. And guess what? Seth right. had to have it. Right.
Right.
So anytime you're talking to your kids about it, you know, please let them know. And yeah. and this not only goes for Stephen and Seth, it goes for Harvey Grant's kids, who I came up with, watched them be born, and Tim Hardaway's son, who they were babies when we were growing right. up, and they didn't grow up like, you mm-hmm. know, Harvey and like Tim mm-hmm. did. So, mm-hmm. You know, watching the guys that you've played with can be an awfully good barometer sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, getting an opportunity to get thrown in the fire. I think that's what a lot of these kids need. And obviously we all know that, you know, this AU system, everyone is so pampered. You know what I mean? Again, if I don't, Dame Dillard just spoke to this the other day. If I'm not playing, I want to be traded. If I'm not this, if I'm sitting on the bench, there's so many opportunities and avenues that when adversity hit, you can run from. That's the one thing I try to teach my kid, you know, obviously because I'm the head coach, I can very easily right. start both my twins, run every play for them, but I feel like I'd be setting them up for failure. So one twin starts, one doesn't. The one that comes off the bench is probably one of the best shooters in the country, hit 10 threes just, last quarter in Atlanta. But to me, sometimes he shies away from the big, like I can tell when Carter's like nervous. I'm just like, bro, get out of your head. Yeah. You know, you're one of the best, you know what I mean? So to me, it's getting thrown in the fire and going through those bumps and bruises and facing adversity. You know what I mean? I can't imagine how hard it is to have your dad as a former NBA player. He's coaching your team,
right?
But you're coming off the bench. You know what I mean? And to me, I'm setting these kids up because I'm not always going to be able to be their coach. So I'm not just going to hand you the playbook. I'm not just going to run every play for you. Like, you have to earn every minute. And sometimes when guys are hurt or not playing well, I'll throw the other twin in the starting lineup now because he understands, like, damn, okay, I've been grinding off the bench. I can't wait to start. But sometimes they think it's supposed to be handed to them. So to me, it's really throwing them in that the fire, making them face adversity. Don't let them run from the grind. Face that grind and get yourself better, because that's the only way, to me, you're ever going to have a chance.
Before we go, I really want to hear what you think about today's stuff Rex wants to ask you, but I apologize for asking this question because I'm sure you've talked about it ad nauseum, but man, that Kobe moment where you put the ball right in his face. I've watched it 100 times. He didn't even blink and he just stands there. That's like real life Fonzie shit. Like, I've never seen it. What? Can you talk us through that real quick and what went through your head?
Let me back up, because I came to UCLA in 98. Kobe came to LA in 96. And as everyone knows, the start of his career didn't really get off to what everyone thought it was supposed to be, or what he thought it was supposed to be. So he was always on our campus. Kobe was walking. You would have thought he was a student at UCLA, hanging out, eating, right, playing pickup games, working out. So I always got a chance to just see him, not necessarily befriend him yet, but just always see him. He would come back into Poly after we'd be done working out and go through his whole workout and be like, holy shit, like, this is the next level. That's who I'm gonna have to guard. So there was kind of always an admiration because I would see his grind. So fast forward, we were just very competitive, always a mutual respect. Every time we played each other, I just look forward to Kobe was that guy. I missed MJ by 1 year. So Kobe was that guy for my generation. So coming to that Orlando Magic Lakers situation, Orlando had just played the Lakers in the finals the year before. We're number one or number two in the East. They're number one in the West. End of March, we're heading towards the playoffs again. So this is kind of just more than just an ABC Saturday regular season game. Like, we're thinking, okay, we're going to see these dudes in the finals in 2 months. So let's go. And Rex, you can contest to this. Kobe, obviously one of the most skilled players we've ever seen, but he also wants to mentally fuck you up. So he's going to do the little shit that he's allowed to do. He's going to grab you. He's going to elbow you. He's going to hit you in your sternum. He's going to hit you in the back when the refs aren't looking. And I was just tired of it because he had got me maybe 4 times. He hit me in the sternum and knocked the wind out of me. I was like, I want to wring this dude's neck. So I was to the point where I was just ready to fight him. Like, put the basketball down, let's square up, and we can shake hands after. So when that play happened, I promise you, it wasn't premeditated, and I really wasn't even thinking about it. If you're watching me, I'm watching because the play was for Vince Carter. He's supposed to come off this back door, and I was supposed to hit him, and then Dwight was going to flare somebody. And so I literally faked the ball in his face while I was watching the play off to my right side, not knowing if I was going to hit him, how close I was, anything like that. So It ended up being, you know, a legendary situation where not till after the game did I realize that his eyelashes were on the ball, didn't move. And it was just it was incredible. But what a lot of people don't know is, you know, after that summer, he ends up calling me. I didn't know his number. I never answered my phone. I happened to just answer this phone call and he's like, what up? It's Kobe. And I'm like, yeah, right. Like, who the hell is this? Like, what's going on? He's like, no, it's Kobe. He's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm good. What's up? And he's like, what are you doing next season? And I, at the time, I was talking because I was in Orlando and Stan Van Gundy was bullshitting with my contract. So I was talking to D-Wade and Pat Riley about just going to Miami because LeBron and Bosch and everyone was on the way there. So I'm thinking I'm going to go play with the Heat and see what happens. And then, you know, I'm from Cali, NorCal, Showtime, Magic was my life. So I get a call from Kobe, just, you know, anyone crazy enough to fuck with me is crazy enough to play with me. Do you want to be a Laker? And I'm like, hell yeah. And when I tell you 4 or 5 days later, I was a Laker. And from there, we became teammates. And then from there, we became brothers. Obviously, if you guys, when we get done, go look at my Instagram. I literally just posted some. Kobe was just so dope to my kids. Like, when I came wow, to the Lakers in 2010-11. So the boys were like 3 or 4. And he was Uncle Kobe from the beginning. Every single shoe that he got, he sent him. So I just made a post yesterday because I was going through something, came up on my memories. Kobe's last pair, like Kobe's last shoe release, he sent the boys' entire team shoes. It was on January 3rd, 2020. Obviously, 20 something days later, he died. But I actually ran across the videos yesterday. Actually, I just posted them on my story, and it just shows that, you know, we went from a mutual respect to about to square up to becoming teammates to becoming brothers. When I tell you post career, you know, Matt, what time the boys play? Kobe would come 2 hours early sometimes. You know, he coached Gigi. He would come 2 hours early just to watch our team and vice versa. We would go support him and Gigi. They would come support us. So we just really grew a brothership through obviously the ups and downs of a career, but outside of that, getting a chance to know the person, getting a chance, you know, not the Mamba who's a killer that only, you know, the most the world knows. I got a chance to meet Kobe, the person, and talk business and talk life and go to dinner and hang out and do a lot of wild shit that a lot of people didn't get to do with him. So, you know, I'm always really fond of that relationship because it came about through, you know, a ball fake that ended up, he's like, man, if this dude's crazy enough to ball fake me, I need that on my team. And, you know, from there, you know, we became brothers. So obviously cut down too short, but it was just always a relationship that I'll really cherish because getting a chance to see the real him is nothing like people thought who he was as a person.
It's great.
I'm trying to go back. And you made a great, I think a really poignant point. When you started talking about him, he came to LA in 96, 97 ish, I guess. And You came to UCLA, what, a year later?
2 years, 98.
2 years later. So you guys are going to be essentially the same age, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when Kobe came in the league, he didn't have success right away. In fact, He wouldn't, like I did. I didn't know how to play when I came in at 19. I've had a couple years of college. He didn't know what he was doing. He went through all kinds of hell those first couple years. Older guys didn't like him much. Younger guys didn't like him much. He didn't have any friends around, right? And imagine if you hadn't, if that's the only interaction you'd have had with him was watching him at UCLA, and you would have never known. And that's the most beautiful part, I think, about our business and our basketball fraternity is getting to know one another. You might have played against one another, you might not have, but getting to know that your peers who you didn't play with, getting to know them as people is super, super rewarding.
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to really see the entire journey. You know what I mean? Yeah. I got to see the journey. I got to see when he broke his right hand and he would come do left-handed workouts the entire time. And the next season, everyone calls, he's coming back shooting left hand. Like, what the fuck is this dude doing? But when I tell you, he would do entire workouts like he was a left-handed dude, pull up threes, transition threes, working out the pick and roll left-handed because he has a cast on his right hand and he would just use the cast as a guide and shoot left hand. I'm like, this dude's psycho. Like, what the hell is he doing right now? You know what I mean? So to be able to see his journey to greatness. And like you said, he wasn't liked. I think deep down it bothered him. Cause I remember, fortunate enough to have his last interview. And we were talking about the media and how they betray people. And he's like, you know, I was just like, how do you feel your whole career? They kind of beat you up. And he's like, I heard everything and that shit hurt. You know what I mean? So imagine coming from your teammates. I remember one story where they said, Kobe used to go on the bus with headphones on, but he wouldn't have the volume on just so he can hear who was talking shit about him. You know what I mean? Like, it was a real grind, and Shaq was the man at the alpha at that time. And he saw the talent in Kobe. And I think that's why he got instead of embracing that, he's like, well, man, this little motherfucker's coming. Let me put him through the ringer real quick. You know what I mean? So he really had to endure a lot. Like they stopped bringing alcohol in the locker room because of Kobe. So then people are mad about that. So there's so many different things that happened to him along the journey that made him that killer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I was fortunate enough to see that side, but I was able to break that wall down and see the person and talk about how that kind of stuff made him feel. And I just really feel honored that he trusted me enough, one, to just let me in, but then two, to just to talk to me so candidly and really tell a side of him that not everyone got a chance to see.
Beautiful. Matt, what's your favorite book?
Ooh.
Favorite movie.
My favorite book right now is I'm reading the Will Smith bio, and I really like it because I just like kind of reading biographies about people and how they came up and just obviously people who have achieved greatness. Yep. Favorite movie. I like to laugh because, you know, things haven't always been laughable. So I like to laugh. So I probably say favorite movie is maybe like Chris Tucker's Money Talks, him and Charlie Sheen. Okay. Okay. Late 90s.
Yeah. Wow.
Nice.
That's a
nice.
First.
That's a great.
What about front row center to see anyone perform or speak, artists, dead or alive?
I'd take two. I would take Tupac and Michael Jackson. Tupac nice. Was my favorite human. And Fantastic. Then Michael Jackson, we all grew up. We all thought we were Michael Jackson at one point in the 80s. So that would be those two people.
Great. Matty Barnes, can't thank you enough, brother. Much love. Come back and do this again, okay?
Man, thanks for having me, fellas. You guys have a great day.
You too. Appreciate you.
Later, bro.
Have a good one, folks.
From his car.
From his car, the whole thing. That's how you do it. He's on his grind.
That was awesome. On, how great is, on brand. On brand.
How great is Matt Barnes?
Man, the thing I come away with that is I bet a lot of people, if you asked who was your favorite teammate, it would be him. The way he took, first of all, he was like a utility player. UCLA, yes. He plays out of position. That's not good for his stock for the NBA, but he does it for 4 years. Then he comes to the NBA, has to change up. Every team demanded different things out of him. And then you hear him talk about that. Well, a lot of it, you know, was premeditated. I thought, well, I need to go knock the shit out of this guy because he's not going to shit out of my guy. Like he's thinking, you know, chess versus checkers. He's ahead mentally where you thought, man, this guy's kind of a mental case when actually he's playing chess.
You know, when you see a guy, we're growing up where we grew up or anybody thinking back to the time you're 13 or 14 and you see the other team warming up on the other end. And if I saw Matt Barnes warming up on the other end, I go, oh man, I hope that guy's not tough or he doesn't know what he's doing or doesn't like to play basketball. Matt Barnes was the guy. That guy wasn't. He was the guy you did not want to play against on the other end of the court. And you found that out the second that you squared off. You realized, oh no, this is serious. I can't mess around out here. I have to play hard now. Mm-hmm. Matt Barnes was that guy. He was trying to earn his keep. And that I probably said it too much, but being a conscientious basketball player or a conscientious athlete or whatever it is, a conscientious actor, whatever your line of work is, it's about the highest compliment that someone can give you. And when I go watch guys play, you know, whether it's high school or college or whatever, I get very put off by guys that aren't conscientious, don't know what the score of the game is, don't know what defense we're in, just came out of a timeout asking his coach again, how do we do this? What are we doing? Drives me crazy. And also those guys get weeded out. That's why Matt Barnes stuck around. The one thing I didn't get to ask him is that I wonder, because I was the opposite. Like I had all the offensive confidence in the world, every game I ever played in, probably my defense had to catch up over, you know, in high school or in college, I was playing catch up. By the time I got to the NBA, I'm still playing catch up. And then at some point I could start going out and guarding others with the kind of same confidence I had as an offensive player. And that takes time. I wonder if Matt ever truly felt like his offense caught up to his defense.
Yeah, it's interesting about his three-point shooting. He said that stat 10 in his first 4 years or something.
And then amazing.
I know he hit like 7 or 8 when he was at Golden State, had the record there for a second. Like,
I mean, think about that. Didn't shoot him in college, and where I was supposed to have been a three-point shooter, I think like my rookie year I made 60.
Amazing.
On like 33%, like just not even a shooter. Crazy. Wow. What a good dude.
Ask him about that Kobe.
Kobe.
He did. He put that thing on his eyelashes.
Yeah. And
Kobe just sat there like, didn't blink. I've watched it 100 times because it's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
If people listening to this have not seen it, just Google, just say Kobe Matt Barnes.
Yeah.
And it'll come right up.
It'll come right up.
And it is crazy.
So great. Can't wait to see what his kids do. It's just it's a great story. I'm a big Matt Barnes guy. And you are now too.
Yeah, it's a good friend of mine now.
That's right. All right. Well, let's do this again next time, buddy. Back next week. All right. That's episode 51 with Matt Barnes. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, right here, powered by basketballnews.com.